The following is a community affairs presentation from the Ulster County Health Department. This is the Healthy Ulster Radio Show, a weekly presentation exploring community health and sustainability with guests representing a broad spectrum of community partners working to make Ulster County the healthiest in New York State. This program is sponsored by the Health Alliance of the Hudson Valley in Kingston, a member of the WMC Health Network.
Good morning. You are listening to Healthy Ulster Radio. I am your host, Dr. Carol Smith, Commissioner of Health and Mental Health for Ulster County. With me this morning is my co-host, Vin Martello, our Director of Community Health Relations. Good morning, Vin.
Good morning, Dr. Smith. How are you?
Fine, thank you.
Dr. Smith, today is a topic which is very interesting, and as being a dad of a teenage daughter, very important to me as well, and that is the critical role of mental health in youth development and wellness. And we're very fortunate to have with us today Adam Billingsley, who's Program Director for Mental Health Awareness at Health Alliance Hospitals in Kingston. And he's running a program with Health Alliance and community partners known as Youth Mental Health First Aid, and offering trainings across Delaware and Ulster counties. And I won't say what it is because I want to hear it from Adam, and he's the expert. Welcome, Adam.
Welcome.
How are you?
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Sure. Adam, let's start with the basics. How does overall mental health affect a young person's development?
So mental health develops very similarly to physical health, in the sense that during adolescence, you have brain development, you have kind of social development that's co-occurring. So for a young person, the mental health effects are just as important as the physical ones. And there has been recent studies with ACEs, which is adverse childhood experiences, and they've had a lot of correlations between mental health challenges and adversity that young people face earlier in life and their health outcomes, whether it's mental health or physical health, into adulthood.
And we hear from, we're in contact, obviously, with a lot of community partners and educators. And we hear from a lot of educators that there seem to be, maybe not technically speaking, but in their opinion, epidemic levels of anxiety and depression among today's youth. From your perspective, what are you seeing out there? What are the issues that young people are facing that might be similar to the past or different from?
Well, there could be several reasons for that. Certainly, according to some of the studies that I've read, there's about a 30% prevalence rate for anxiety challenges for young people, anywhere between the ages of 8 and 18, I believe. And it's becoming more prevalent at younger and younger ages. I think part of the reason for that is that we are becoming more aware of some of these issues that perhaps at earlier times in society, these things were kind of looked on as just maybe behavioral issues, or maybe it was just something where this person is shy. It's not necessarily that they have an anxiety issue. It's just that they kind of keep to themselves. So what we define as an anxiety disorder or an anxiety health challenge, mental health challenge, is changing with each new iteration of the DSM, which is the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual. It's basically the Bible for psychiatry, and they have updated it over the years, and it's kind of evolved with the science that has come out towards that. There is a influx of technology which can certainly boost that. One of the newest I guess phenomena is social media. And social media, as far as whether it's Instagram or Twitter or Facebook, has created a difference in the way that people socialize with one another, and the way that you compare yourself to others becomes a little bit more superficial, in the sense that for Instagram's sake, you have these things like Photoshop. A lot of people are only really posting kind of the highlights of their life, and you have to compare that to the reality of your own. And it's kind of a false, comparison between the two. Mm-hmm. So that's certainly one of them. Being able to utilize smartphones and have access to basically a backlit screen affects sleep. And that's one that is certainly a major factor for both young people and for adults. I'm very guilty of this myself. If I'm, you know, basically winding down at the end of the day, I might be checking news articles or reading something online on my phone. And that backlit screen is essentially tricking your brain into thinking that it's still sunlight out. So You're disrupting what would be a normal sleep pattern, a normal sleep cycle. And for young people, it's especially important for them to have a significant amount of sleep.
Nine hours. Pediatricians.
Exactly. So having that kind of at both ends, in the sense that school starts very early, and for most young people, having access to a cell phone kind of, I guess, uncurated for the most part, tends to disrupt that sleep cycle as well. So there's many different factors that are going on into that. Mm-hmm.
I know I've often thought about the fact that really there's no emotional safe zone for kids. For instance, when I was younger, if you had an incident happen at school that might have been embarrassing or something you regretted doing, pretty much there were four or five people around. It might have gotten out to a few more people, but pretty much it was over in a few hours. Now it's instantaneously dispersed throughout the school environment. And also at the end of the day, you know, if you had a bad day, it was over. You went home, you played sports, you read a book, you hung out with your friends, whatever. It kind of dissipated. But on social media, it's kind of following you 24/7. That's got to be difficult for kids.
Yeah. The internet doesn't forget, does it? So that certainly is more of a newer phenomenon as well, in the sense that we are archiving all of the embarrassing events that are happening, especially with youth. There are issues such as there's social media platforms like Snapchat where they're sending and receiving compromising videos of one another, or they might be doing things that are relatively juvenile, and they think that this is just going to go away, but there actually are consequences for that behavior. They think that it's just a Snapchat is one in particular that's very interesting. It's you send videos to another person and they're supposedly deleted right away, but what happens is you can take screenshots of it, or a lot of times parents are kind of on this as well, and they'll capture these videos and report them to the school, or they'll get spread around in other ways. So I think part of the issue is in the sense that historically it has been something bad happens, or maybe something embarrassing happens, I should say, and it is relatively forgotten, or maybe not even witnessed on the level that it is today. So that's certainly something that's changing, in the sense that everything is recorded nowadays.
Yeah, and then you add to that mix, you know, school violence and just general violence in our culture. You add to the mix gender identity issues, you know, which are certainly more, I think, more prevalent in terms of awareness. It's got to be a difficult thing for kids to negotiate. And as you said, their schedules are intense. I remember going to a parent's day at my daughter's school and actually going through her school day, but in a condensed form. But there was no time in between. It was like one end of the school to the other, to the next class, starting at 7:45 in the morning. And it was like very little downtime, very little time to just assimilate.
And very often kids are saying they don't have time to even go and eat a lunch, they are so pressed. And the pressures for performance and are very intense. And they are, you know, having to absorb that. Not to mention all of the flood of negative news information, not only locally, but nationally and internationally, everything from the fear of global warming to, you know, local shooting incidents. And it's hard enough for adults who have managed to weather life over a few decades, let alone a child or an adolescent that's still trying to mature.
Develop resiliency skills, basically. I mean, I've heard the term psychic toxicity, you know, which is that, you know, when you're taking in all these negative images and sounds and information, it can't help but permeate your emotional system and your well-being and have some effect on that.
Yeah, toxic stress is certainly a very real thing, and there are insulating factors, protective factors that can mitigate that, such as, having positive adult interactions, even if it's just one person. So, you know, having a stable home life, a stable routine are certainly ways to prevent against that. But with things like social media, with stress from school, it certainly becomes almost prevalent. And that's when it becomes toxic. If you don't have a proper way to mitigate that stress, and there's just it's constant throughout your day, from the moment that you wake up to the moment that you get out of school to the moment you go to sleep, there's no release from that. So it's kind of like a boiling pot that's just bubbling over.
Right. And I know that you developed in your programs and your training some really good tools for folks to use. And we're going to talk about that right after this short break. You're listening to Healthy Ulster Radio.
I love the way that picture looks. Can you move it to the left just a bit? Careful on the ladder.
Really? You know I'm always careful. Let me move it just a little bit more. Uh-oh!
Let's face it, accidents happen. When life takes an unexpected turn, you want your family treated at a full-service emergency room, where you'll find physicians who are board-certified in emergency medicine.
Let's get in the car. We're going to the ER.
Oh, but we'll be waiting for hours.
Introducing the 30 minutes or less ER pledge, only at Mid-Hudson Regional Hospital in Poughkeepsie and Health Alliance Hospital in Kingston, members of the WMC Health Network. When you arrive in either of these emergency rooms, you'll be seen by a member of the care team within 30 minutes. Expert trusted emergency care without the wait. To read the 30 minutes or less ER pledge, visit wmchealth.org/ER30.
Well, that was painless.
Hey, I'm the one with the stitches.
No, I was talking about the wait.
Another way the WMC Health Network is advancing care here.
Let me ask you a question. When you think of the American Legion, what comes to mind? Is it the way we fight daily for our veterans to get them the benefits they've earned through their service?
I work hard every day to make sure that our veterans get the benefits they deserve. I am the American Legion.
For nearly 100 years, the American Legion has been our nation's leading advocate for veterans and their families.
I am the American Legion.
This is today's American Legion.
To learn more, visit legion.org.
Welcome back. You are listening to Healthy Ulster Radio. Our special guest today is Adams Billingsley, the Program Director for Mental Health Awareness at Health Alliance Hospital in Kingston. Adam, before the break, we were talking about toxic stress and the constant barrage, really, of injurious kinds of stimuli that we're all exposed to on a daily basis. And I know that you are involved in teaching a very important tool that we currently feel makes a difference in helping individuals not only help others, but in effect help themselves, called Youth Mental Health First Aid. Can you talk a little bit more about that program? What does that entail?
Sure. So mental health first aid is comparable to physical medical first aid or a CPR course, in the sense that it is a intervention program that is accessible to all adults. It's not required to be any type of clinician or have any type of psychological professional background. It's essentially what we would consider a gatekeeper training. So the idea is that you present this course to youth-centric workforces or people who have children at home, maybe family members who are young, but really this is applicable throughout adolescence. So anywhere, up into your 20s, this mental health training is certainly still usable. And there is adult mental health first aid as well, but it focuses a little bit more on the aspects of recovery, where youth mental health first aid focuses on resiliency. So mental health first aid is a informational course. It's about 8 hours long, so it is very dense as far as the material is concerned, but it also has a lot of practical strategies. So the first module of the course, the first 4 hours, is going over warning signs, risk factors for young people, just the common mental health challenges and the disorders that young people face, such as anxiety disorders, mood disorders, depression. So those bits of information are then in the second half put to practical use. So we work on approaching youth if they are struggling with mental health challenges. Are they in a crisis situation, and how to appropriately address a crisis situation? The same way if somebody's having a heart attack, you can administer CPR until the heart attack either subsides or more likely professional help, emergency services aren't made available. So the idea is that you give people the information so that they are able to give early intervention, which produces better outcomes overall. But you also give them the strategies so that they know how to approach, so that it doesn't come from an area where you're dealing with young people who are particularly vulnerable. The way that you speak to them, you don't want to be patronizing, you don't want to be judgmental. So we really work on practicing, you know, giving reassurance and making sure that young people know that there's hope and that there's somebody that they can speak to.
So can you give us some for those of us who know nothing about the topic, who may be out there, can you give some examples of the kinds of warning signs that you might be looking for?
Sure. So the important thing is to kind of differentiate between what is a warning sign and what is typical adolescence as well.
Right.
We don't want a lot of people worrying about their young person because of the fact that their tastes are changing or because of the fact that they're dealing with what would be common, challenges throughout youth. You know, there's certainly struggles dealing with self-identification, changing tastes in the sense that, you know, they may be shifting more from focusing on their families to their peer groups. Now, these are typical examples of adolescence. What would be a warning sign is if there is a change in taste, but it's not replaced by anything. So maybe they're losing interest in some of their hobbies or their favorite activities, but nothing is replacing it. Mm. There is typical adolescence in the sense that they're spending less time with family, but more time with friends. Now, what would be a warning sign is if they're withdrawing completely from both social groups at that point.
Interesting.
So those are certainly ones. Over obsession with privacy is another one. I mean, young people, you know, and their parents are often at odds as far as privacy is concerned. You know, there's always the argument.
Parallel like, lives in the same house, you mean?
Yeah, like, exactly. Like keep that door
teenager
open.
Teenager in room, yep. Door closed, and yeah. Dad out in the...
Right. So wanting the door closed might be typical adolescence, but perhaps, you know, being overly protective of their phone, maybe not really like showing you anything as far as what's going on in their social life. Those can be warning signs. So it's important for adults who are either parents or educators or after school counselors to be able to pick up on some of these warning signs and be able to follow up on it. And that's really the most important point, is that you hopefully are developing a rapport and a relationship with the young people in your lives so that you can continue to kind of put these pieces together.
Uh-huh.
And that's one of the important factors is, you know, sometimes it's totally typical for somebody to be having a bad day, but when it stretches out into weeks at a time, or maybe somebody's just really been, you know, upset or moody for weeks, and it's something that isn't typically common for their behavior, then that's certainly something that you would want to address, whether it's with the family or with a professional counselor.
It's interesting you should say that, because I was reading this fascinating book called Untangled, Guiding Your Daughter from 7 Steps from Childhood to Adulthood. And it's written by Lisa DeMora, PhD, who was who's a psychologist who has dealt exclusively with adolescent girls. But in each chapter, in each stage, at the end, she has two lists. These are the things that are kind of normal in quotation marks. These are the things that you need to pay more attention to. And that's an interesting way of looking at it. So in terms of helping kids develop resilience, okay, so you recognize the warning signs. What are the kinds of things that you can do to enhance and boost that resilience in kids?
Right. So we talk about risk factors and these warning signs, but there also is, kind of to contrast that, there are protective factors that pretty much no matter what your role is with a young person, you can provide to a certain extent, whether it's at home, providing a stable home life, making sure that you're sharing a meal together, making sure that you're providing a routine or a schedule that is consistent, you know, just having the very simple familial structure in a stable environment is certainly one protective factor. If it's something where you're an educator, or you're working with somebody who maybe isn't your child in particular, just being a mentor, encouraging them to pursue hobbies or passions or even just simple sports activities or leisure activities are certainly protective factors. Spirituality is one that is certainly becoming more, I guess, common in the sense that we just recently had a panel at the high school during the May Day ceremonies for the underclassmen, and we had a yoga instructor come in and work on breathing exercises and meditation.
Mindfulness,
so, kind of like a non-denominational kind of spirituality where you're just practicing mindfulness is certainly one that's becoming more and more popular. And it's accessible too. So exercise and meditation are two of the ones that are have the best potential outcomes and also don't really cost a whole lot of money to actually provide to a young person.
Right. So it's like kind of like physical, mental, physical, emotional, and spiritual well-being kind of all go hand in hand in an integrated way, right?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So the difference between what is like a normal stressor and toxic stress is the ability to overcome those challenges and to have some sort of release. So there needs to be a balance. Mm-hmm. It's not that you're trying to insulate so much that there is no adversity for a young person.
Right, it's just how to handle it when it does occur.
Exactly, right. Yeah. Basically, you want to make sure that they're developing healthy coping strategies, that they're not, you know, coping in ways where they may be looking towards substance use as a way to kind of escape from all of their problems. You want them to have, you know, these healthy practices, whether it's, you know, speaking, you know, and being able to have that dialogue with a family member, or maybe they have a healthy outlet in the sense where it's just a sporting activity or an art activity, but just being able to express themselves in a way that is healthy.
And I know that, you know, we do the Youth Development Survey every 2 years, which is an anonymous survey of all 7th to 12th graders in Ulster County on substance use, attitudes, and habits, and what they call pro-social involvement, which is, you know, sports, clubs, hobbies, arts, all of those things, you know, which keep kids, you know, give them an outlet to express their creativity, their emotions in a really positive, supportive environment is really the best mitigating factor to prevent substance use with kids.
Absolutely.
So, Adam, as usual, running short on time. So, if people, this is a really big topic, and people, I'm sure, want more information or maybe want to get involved, maybe take the training, how do they get in touch with you?
Right. So, they can either get in touch with me through the hospital. They can call the Benedictine campus, the Mary's Avenue campus of Health Alliance, and they can connect directly to me, Adam Billingsley. They can attend one of these trainings. The goal is to be having these trainings in the community for the next 2 years. So for the month of May, we're doing these May Day events at the YMCA. We're doing trainings at summer camps, but we also want these open to the public so that anybody or any particular workforce or community is able to access them. So we can provide those trainings to anywhere.
And is that on a common website page with a schedule somewhere where the people can go for quick reference, or just call and ask for you at Health Alliance?
So there are certain ones that are upcoming for the month of May and June, but as far as this is relatively new and we're focusing a lot on workforce development, so at this point the community trainings are this month at the YMCA, and I believe you can look at the Kingston Into Yellow Facebook page and they'll be on there. But if you're interested in bringing these to communities outside of Kingston, which we absolutely want to do, we can set them up and provide them for those communities, and we'll do the outreach as
well. That's great. This is really terrific work and certainly needed more than ever. So thank you for all the great work you do out there, Adam. We really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
You're listening to Healthy Ulster Radio. Tune in next week for more great information that you can use to keep yourself, your family, and our community healthy and strong.
You've been listening to the Healthy Ulster Radio Show, a community affairs presentation from the Ulster County Health Department, sponsored by Health Alliance of the Hudson Valley in Kingston, a member of the WMC Health Network. Thanks for listening, and be sure to join us for another edition of the Healthy Ulster Radio Show next week.